There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
Hey, warmer brother, hello. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. As joining me in segment number two, Ben Wilson of VSiN will be aboard. You may know him as well from his great play-by-play work, does amazing work on the college basketball front, on the college baseball front. I know that he's done some tennis in the past. Some have called him a young Joe Davis, and I think that that's very accurate of putting it, as he's actually a little bit of a better than Joe Davis as well. I know that he does a tremendous job just looking at so many different things, and we're going to be joined by Ben in segment number two to get a little bit of a lay of the land in Major League Baseball. Both me and him are from the great state of Wisconsin, so going to look at the Brewers, going to look at the NL Central, and if time allows, a few games for this Sunday as well. And then in the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Sunday as we touch them all. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is by Twitter /XTimeline at @JuninUnderscore D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, naming does not matter, size per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way, that's find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter /X questions today, as I'm sure many of you guys, much like myself, were enveloped in the Final Four. But let's take a look back at everything that we did get in baseball on Saturday. I've tried to find some trends and tried to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
The A's are now 5-1 on the run line in their last 6 games. As they get the job done outright against the Detroit Tigers, 4-0 the final. Paul Blackburn walks a plank to 6 scoreless innings. From there, Austin Adams was able to end a scoreless inning. I still have no idea why they're throwing Mason Miller out of the bullpen, but 2 scoreless innings for him as well, as he looked good. And Brent Rooker goes deep for the second time in this series. He's able to take Kenta Maeda for a ride. Second home run season. Kenta Maeda, by the way, looking relatively rough to begin the season. He gives up 3 runs over the course of 5 2/3 innings, including that bomb. Joey Wentz from there was wincing in pain as he allowed a run in 1 2/3 innings. At Wilfes, 5 outs out of the bullpen scoreless. That has been a growing trend out there. This should come as no shock to a lot of people, but the Cleveland Guardians played an under on Saturday. They were one of your more underwhelming teams a season ago, as they're able to get the job done by a kind of 3-1 against the Minnesota Twins, a Twins team that may have been one of your better under teams thus far this season as well. For the Minnesota Twins, they've only played 2 of their games to the over thus far this campaign. As for Cleveland, Carlos Cookie Carrasco, not long for this game, punches out 6 and 3 innings, but allowed 3 walks, 1 run along the way. Bullpen from there was pretty spotless, though. How about getting a squirrel sending out Scott Barlow, Tyler Beede, Emmanuel Clase, and Nick Sandlin? Then you had a two-inning combined effort from Hunter Gaddis along with Cade Smith. Meanwhile, for the Minnesota Twins, they did allow a home run to the short fry, Mr. David Fry, who was able to get his first home run in the campaign. That comes off of Joe Ryan, who takes the loss, giving up 3 runs over the course of 6 innings, including that home run. Jay Jackson comes in. He's able to lend a scoreless inning, and then you do get 2 scoreless innings out of Jorge Alcala along the way as well. How about the Miami Marlins just continuing this rough run? 0-9 on the run line, 0-9 straight up. They get lambasted by the St. Louis Cardinals, this by a count of 3-1 as Miami, just their second under of the season, but for Miami, they couldn't get the offense going as Trevor Rogers didn't give the world's worst start. He did walk 3, but gave up 3 runs, 2 of which were earned over the course of 5 innings. Brian Hoying, along with Tanner Scott, were both able to lend a scoreless inning. He also got one from Birch Smith as well, but for Miami, they just weren't able to touch Steven Matz, who's looked very solid since the middle part of last season. 5 scoreless innings from Andrew Kittredge. Does allow a run in an inning, but Giovanni Gallegos, Ryan Helsley, Jojo Romero, they all lend a scoreless inning of their own. In 11 innings, the old Pittsburgh Pirates walk the plank to a win. They're now 7-2 to the over, and they are now 7-2 straight up. 5-4, they get it done against Baltimore. As for Baltimore, Tyler Wells, he did not pitch. Wells giving up 7 hits, 3 runs in total in the course of 5 1/3 innings, including a home run going deep. Joey Bart is able to get his first home run as a Pittsburgh Pirate. You may recall him from the San Francisco Giants. From there, the bullpen was good for the Baltimore Orioles. So you did have Mike Bauman give up an unearned run. He was unable to record an out as he walked a pair of guys along the way. Craig Kimbrell, Jacob Webb, Keegan Aiken, they were all able to give you a scoreless inning. Didn't take a pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. And then you had Danny Columbia able to lend a scoreless inning to force an 11th. And then John Easley comes in, gives up the unearned run in the 11th inning. As for the Orioles, they just couldn't hit with men in scoring position. 0-14 with men in scoring position, while the Pittsburgh Pirates, they weren't all that like a lot better at 3-16 with men in scoring position, but Bailey Falter did not live up to his name. 6 scoreless innings. He did get into a little bit of a sticky wicket with Ryder Ryan giving up 2 runs over the course of an inning. David Benar, he allows a run in an inning as well, so he got a blown save, but Raldis Chapman, a scoreless inning. Luis Ortiz gives up an unearned run in 1 2/3 innings, but Josh Fleming, he's able to get you an out of the bullpen, so the Pirates, they continue to be hot. The LA Dodgers, they continue to win games. Shock, shock, surprise, surprise. 4-1, they're able to get the job done against the Chicago Cubs. 8-3 start for LA, by the way, as Yoshinobu Yamamoto, he comes in and he lends another nice start. Ever since he got shooken up in South Korea, he has been tremendous. 8 punch-outs and 5 scoreless innings. From there, Ryan Brazier, Joe Kelly, Danny Hudson, they give you a scoreless inning. Evan Phillips allows a run in an inning, but by then, game had been in the bag. And for the Chicago Cubs, you had Jordan Wicks. Well, he had one go between the wicks, 2 runs surrendered in 4 2/3 innings. He punched out 7. Jose Quas from there comes in. He allows a run in 1 1/3 innings. Yancy Almonte, unearned run given up in his inning of work. Meanwhile, Luke Little comes up big with a scoreless inning along with Mark Leiter Jr. But for the Cubs, 9 men left on base. They go 1 of 9 with men in scoring position. So that was rough for them. Hey, the Mets decide to play an over. Of course, I made it the DK Network write-up pick on Friday, not Saturday, but 9-6, the Reds. They're able to get the win over the Metropolitans in a start where Luis Severino actually wasn't bad. 2 runs, one of which earned, given up in 5 innings, punched out 7, and then the bullpen went completely to mush. Yoan Ramirez in 2 innings allows 5 runs, a 5-spot in the 8th inning, including a home run. And Spencer Steer steered that one out for his 3rd home run of the campaign. Jake Diekman, he allowed 2 runs in an inning as well. And for the Mets, they do go 4 of 12 with men in scoring position. Nick Martinez, not the start he was looking for, gave up 5 runs in 5 innings, but Buck Farmer, 2 scoreless innings, Emilio Pagan, a scoreless inning, and Alexis Diaz allows a run and an inning, but by then, game had been pretty much in the bag. And also in the bag is the Chicago White Sox stinking up the joint this season. 1-7 to begin the year. The Royals are able to royally shut them out. 3-0 the final. Chris Flexen actually didn't pitch horribly. He gave up 3 runs in 6 1/3 innings, including a home run going deep off of him was MJ Melendez, 2nd home run in the campaign and 2nd of the series. But I mean, for Chris Flexen's standards, that's not horrible. Brian Shaw gives you an out of the bullpen. Tanner Banks, a scoreless setting. And then leisurely, you had Jordan Leisure be able to give you an out of the bullpen as well while allowing 3 hits. But for the Chicago White Sox, they just can't find a way on base. Two walks, three hits in total as Michael Wacha. He forced the White Sox to go. Michael Wacha, 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 Wacha. Dying Pac-Man voice for the White Sox. Seven scoreless innings from Wacha. Meanwhile, Nick Anderson, Chris Tran, they're both able to land a scoreless inning. And the Philadelphia Phillies, looks like all they needed was head to Washington to be able to get right there, able to take down the Nationals. This by a count of 5-2 for the Nationals. JT Realmuto, he provides a bomb, his second home run of the season. That comes off of Jake Irvin, as for Irvin, not the start that he was necessarily looking for. Gives up four runs over the course of six innings. He did have Dylan Flora allow a run and an inning from there. And then you had Derek Law along with Robert Garcia lend a scoreless inning. Joey Gallo does get a home run for the Washington Nationals, his second home run of the season. That comes off of Ranger Suarez. And that's pretty much all the Washington Nationals would get on offense on this day, as Suarez gives up two runs over the course of six innings. Jeff Hoffman, Gregory Soto combined for two scoreless innings, and Jose Alvarado scoreless inning. So he's able to pick up a nice save. The comeback of the day goes to the Atlanta Braves. They get down in this game against the Arizona Diamondbacks 6-0 in the first inning, and as the Atlanta Braves seem to always do, they get the job done. 9-8 the final is for Arizona. Brandon Pfaadt, he had a nice start in this game until the fifth inning, where he gave up three runs in that one. Five runs in total surrendered in 5 2/3 innings. As for Atlanta, Marcell Ozuna was able to take him deep. Fourth home run of the campaign. That was a three-run shot. And then from there, the bullpen went to mush. Kyle Nelson got a pair of outs out of the bullpen, but Luis Frias gives up two runs, one of which was earned. And Ben Jarvis gives up two runs in 1 1/3 innings. Meanwhile, you had for the Atlanta Braves a less than stellar start from Max Fried. Gives up all eight runs, seven of which were earned in 4 1/3 innings. Then Dylan Lee from there, 2 2/3 innings scoreless. AJ Minter a scoreless inning. Rossy Iglesias, he's able to supply a scoreless inning. As for the Atlanta Braves, 7 of 17 with men in scoring position. It was nip and tuck, but the New York Yankees, they were able to indeed get the job done against the Toronto Blue Jays. 9-8 the final. As for Toronto, Kevin Gausman got completely shelled in this one. 6 runs, 5 of which were earned, and only got 4 outs. For the Yankees, they took him deep twice. Giancarlo Stanton, second home run of the season. Aaron Judge, second home run season. Then Mitch White had to come in long relief, and he served one up to Anthony Rizzo. Rizzo goes deep, his first home run of the campaign for Mr. White. Gives up 3 runs, all of which were earned in 4 1/3 innings. Tim Mesa gives you an out of the bullpen. Nate Pearson was able to supply a scoreless inning. And for the Yankees, things did get a little bit hairy after Clark Schmidt left this game. Not a bad start from him. 2 runs given up in 4 1/3 innings. Luke Weaver from there gives up 3 runs over the course of 2 innings. Victor Gonzalez, Clay Holmes combined for 2 scoreless innings. But Ian Hamilton does give up 3 runs over the course of 2/3 of an inning as well. So that was a little bit less than ideal. But things have been very ideal for the Walker Texas Rangers to begin the season. They are following up their World Series crown with the fact that they got a 7-2 win over the Houston Astros. By the way, going back to that Yankees game, they are the last team in the big leagues to reach 2 overs thus far this season, as they had 2 overs, 6 unders, and a push. Meanwhile, the Rangers, they have been quite a nice over team since the beginning part of last season, though things have ironed out a little bit more in terms of their totals, 4 overs and 4 unders thus far this season, as they got to J.P. France. France gives up 3 runs in 5 2/3 innings, and then Ryan Presley, boy, did he not have a great relief appearance in this one. 4 runs surrendered in 1/3 of an inning. Brian Abreu, Taylor Scott, they were able to provide a scoreless inning between the two of them. Rafael Montero, he was able to give you a scoreless inning. And for the Astros, they leave 10 men on base in this one, as 55 Shades of John Gray was not long for this game. Gives up 2 unearned runs in 3 2/3 innings. From there, you had Jose Reina, Kirby Yates, David Robertson all provide a scoreless inning. Josh Jabors, Jose Leclerc, they combined for 2 scoreless innings. And then Brock and Rolberg was able to give you an out on the bullpen as well. Hard to win your DK Network right a pick on the money line when the team that you bet on doesn't score. That happened with the San Francisco Giants. They get shut out 4-0 against the San Diego Padres. Everything happened in the first inning, as Keaton Wynn, he got a little bit of a rough just call in general on a ball that was called to Ha-Sung Kim. And then the next batter, Jerickson Profar, goes deep for a grand slam. This after Jung Oh Lee let a ball fall right in front of his face. But even if that would have been a solo home run, he still had more than enough for the Padres to be able to get the job done. Michael King, he was the king. 7 scoreless innings he was dealing. Tom Cosgrove was able to come in for a pair of outs out of the bullpen. Stephen Kolick was able to give you an out of the bullpen as well before Robert Suarez comes in He closes the door in the ninth inning. Meanwhile, for the Giants, a scoreless inning in this one out of Landon Rupp. You were able to get two scoreless innings from Nick Avila. And past that grand slam, Keane Wynn didn't allow anything. As a matter of fact, he allowed four runs on three hits, including that grand slam. So one of those strange days where neither team could get a whole heck of a lot going with the bat. For the LA Angels, they got just enough going with their bats to be able to get it done against the Boston Red Sox. They win this one by a count of 2-1. Boston has been a little bit hot and cold with regards to bats this far this season. Meanwhile, the Angels, they have been able to play 5 overs to 3 unders thus far this season. As for Boston, and Jaron Duren get picked off in the early part of the game. That did not help them out. And Garrett Whitlock, he was able to keep the Angels scoreless, but just was unable to give a lot of length as he racks up 4 walks and 4 to third innings for 101 pitches from there. Greg Weisert gives up 2 unearned runs thanks to a Rafael Devers error. There was a play that was out at first, was overturned to safe, and from there the Angels score their 2 runs of the game. Isaiah Campbell, he comes in, he gives you an out of the bullpen, and you got 5 punch-outs. The 2 scoreless innings of Justin Slayton, but for LA, Reed Detmers was dealing. 12 strikeouts, gives up 1 run in 6 innings. Adam Simber, Matt Moore, Carlos Acevis, they're all able to end a scoreless inning of their own. With the Tampa Bay Rays, after they allowed a walk-off grand slam on Friday, much better on Saturday. 8-6, they take down the Colorado Rockies. For the Rays, it was Isaac Paredes who was able to go deep out for Tyler Kinley. His third home run season then was the big difference maker, as the Colorado Rockies in this game, they were leading by a count of 6-1 going into the top of the 7th inning, and then they made like their buddy at the bar and could not close. Ryan Feltner, 10 punch-outs, allows 1 run in 6 innings, and then the schlubs in the bullpen could not do anything. Gio Meeks does not get a single out. He allows 2 runs. Tyler Kinley gives up 3 runs in 2/3 of an inning. Jake Bird gives you the bird, giving up 2 runs in an inning, and then Justin Lawrence, 4 outs out of the bullpen, scoreless. Meanwhile, for the Rays, Tyler Alexander, not what he was looking for, gives up 2 home runs, 4 runs in total over the course of 4 1/3 innings. Chris Davinsky, 2 1/3 innings. He allowed 2 runs, including a home run going deep for Colorado. You were able to get a trio of bombs as Ryan McMahon, his second home run season, Michael Toglia, his second, and Brendan Doyle, his second home run of the campaign. But from there, Jason Adam, Colin Poche, they both lend a scoreless inning, and Garrett Clevenger, he's able to come in, hold down the 4 for a scoreless inning of his own. And for the Milwaukee Brewers, this was not such a savory day for them. They lose the Seattle Mariners by a count of 5-3, though the Brewers up to a 5-2 start still. D.L. Hall, this was not the start he was looking for. Gives up 3 runs over the course of 5 1/3 innings from there. But Bryce Wilson and Hobie Milner both give up a solo home run, with Wilson punching out 5 2/3 innings along the way. Milner just 2/3 of an inning before J.B. Bukakis gives you an out of the bullpen, though. If you're looking for good news for the Brewers, Jackson Chirillo, he was able to go deep off of Austin Voth, his second home run season, as Voth gives up all 3 runs in 1/3 of an inning, as Seattle was able to get up by a pretty nice margin in this game. They were up 4-0 prior to that. Bryce Miller, he was stealing 7 scoreless innings. Meanwhile, Gabe Spire, Trent Thornton both give you an out of the bullpen, and Andres Munoz, he's able to come in, lock it down. He's able to lend a scoreless inning. And if you're looking at what we've all seen in baseball this far this season, whole lot of overs. Things were a little bit more underwhelming on Saturday, but so we've seen 69 overs to 53 unders. That is a 56.6% hit rate to the over. Favorites on the money line, they're starting to heat up as well. 75 and 52 straight up. That's a little bit over 59% as favorites went 10 and 5 on Saturday. And the unders, they went 10 and 5 on Saturday as well. So that's what we're seeing in Major League Baseball right now, and that's what we're all getting trend-wise. Coming up next, how about if we take a look at the NL Central, and how about if we take a look at what we can expect from some of these teams, including the Milwaukee Brewers, moving forward, and take a look at a few games for Sunday. We'll do that with Ben Wilson, who does great work here at VSiN, next, right here on the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is always great to be joined by this man, as Ben Wilson. He does absolutely amazing work. Taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of baseball. I know he does a lot of college baseball play-by-play when it comes down to the prime part of the season. But on top of that, you're able to catch him doing play-by-play work when it comes to indoor football, when it comes to college basketball. He does great work at VSiN, taking a look at football and so much more. And you're able to catch him every weekend on our Live Bet Saturday and Sunday shows. And you're able to catch him on Twitter /checks at Ben, his first name, _ Wilson, and then another _ and the number one altogether. And Ben, always great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Likewise, Greg. Always a pleasure and hard to believe. Here we go. I mean, start of the season underway. And yeah, someone who does a lot of college baseball, I've been amazed at how many of these young prospects, it's like they get called up younger and younger and more trust being given to them by these teams. It creates a really interesting dynamic, both hitting and pitching, since there's just a lot of unknowns with that. And I definitely am of the belief we can use that to our advantage when it comes to the daily betting, whether that's the prop market or sides or totals.
Absolutely. And how about if we dive into a division and a team that is very near and dear to us? That'd be the Milwaukee Brewers and the NL Central. As for the Brewers, it's been a really nice start to the season for them. Wasn't expecting a ton of them, given the fact that they traded away Corbin Burns for DL Hall and pretty much a few ice cream sandwiches. But that said, how do you gauge this Brewers 5-2 start? Because it certainly has been based around the pitching.
Yeah, and I am of the belief, if you know, it's a team that's young, that has so many pieces who are unproven, it's going to be a really fun year. I don't know that ultimately it's going to mean tons of success. Like, I could see, you know, where the pace of the Brewers is currently at. It feels like a team that, you know, if they win 85 games, it's because they go 20-4 in one run games and they have a negative run differential. That's just sort of the feel right now of the team. I think the biggest issue we're seeing has been that bullpen, even though I would say that's where there's the most room for growth and positive upside, because clearly, I mean, Abner Uribe has the stuff to be a legit big league closer. Yoel Piam showed he was one of the best setup men quietly in baseball a season ago. And Hobie Milner is a totally respectable, you know, late inning lefty-lefty matchup guy. It's really just now that you're in these high leverage situations, Can you consistently get that level of play out of them, especially as you wait for Devin Williams to come back for at least a couple more months, if not longer? And we've started to see, I think, a little bit of the cracks of that already, even after the really good start and the 5-1 beginning for a loss Friday night to Seattle. That's the thing. When I watch them, Greg, and on the one hand, it's great to see like that youthful exuberance, right? They don't look afraid of the moment. I mean, Uribe is doing all the wild gesticulations toward the opposing dugouts. He's not afraid to holster them and get fired up. I just wonder, as teams make adjustments, you know, what will we see Milwaukee look like as we get more into the meat of the season and they have, you know, those tougher stretches in the schedule? I kind of get the feel like they are going to be due at a certain point for like an 8-9 game losing streak just because of the youth and because of the nearly the lack of durability and the depth that they have. And when you're relying on a guy like Joe Ross as a fifth starter, D.L. Hall so unproven, he's been up and down so far. I'm just not sure that the depth is really there. I think there will be individual spots for Milwaukee, especially when you get Freddie Peralta starts, to really look to back them. But there's still a long way to go. I'm just happy with so little expectation that they put a fun product out on the field so far, even if it's going to be a little bit more up and down and maybe inconsistent.
Yep, and I feel like both of these centrals, both the AL Central and the NL Central, very wide open this year because the Chicago Cubs, I like what they were able to do in the offseason. Still do have a few question marks in terms of some of the starting pitching for them. Jordan Wicks did not look bad on Saturday, but certainly have a few things that we need to figure out there. Certainly when it comes to that NL Central, the Reds, our team has a little bit up and coming. The Cardinals have good hitting, but they don't necessarily have great pitching. And I just take a look at that NL Central, and you've got the Pittsburgh Pirates who's coming up, and I could see a argument really for all five of these teams being able to finish either first or last in the division at this point. It's that close.
Yeah, you're so right. It's not like I want to go out and say, all right, well, time to totally buy Pirate stock, you know, before they become prohibitive favorites. I really think you'll see a lot of ebbs and flows, and timing of the market will be everything this year, especially as it relates to the futures in that division. But the one thing I've kind of felt uneasy on just heading into this year is just how would Craig Counsell fit in and just adapt in his style relative to the sort of payroll that Chicago is now in recent years been known for as a first-year manager of the Cubs. It was almost like Craig Counsell just took pride in having one of the lowest payrolls in the major leagues every year to try to find out-getters, to find these uniquely underrated guys, you know, deeper in his staff, whether that was through the minor leagues or, you know, guys they'd find just sort of off the scrap heap, really, and turn them into useful guys. Well, that's not really the case, you know, in Chicago anymore, and you're paying money for bigger name players. That's what I'm curious to see and how it works out, because with what Counsell has done, his track record as a manager, I mean, it speaks for itself, right? And you would think just naturally, Greg, if okay, all of a sudden now you give him more payroll, better arms and better pieces just on a paper perspective, you'd think they'd be really good. But you, I don't know, it's a weird fit where Counsell is at. And I still think that's a Cubs staff that has a lot of work to do to get some more consistency in their rotation. And so that's the one that I kind of find myself a little bit the most uneasy and unsure of, as weird as that is to say, since they've been one of the top two favorites basically all year since the preseason polls came out. I would tell you the Cardinals feel like the team I'm the closest to just being out on and saying, okay, it's going to take a lot for me to really have my perception changed on them because of all the injuries they've had to deal with how Ollie Marmol has tried to, you know, and going up even higher than him, John Mozeliak as a GM. It just feels like kind of this misguided effort to put together a sort of roster without really spending legit top market level money to make them competitive. And I just haven't been impressed with what I've watched with the lineup, you know, going back even to some of the spring training issues they had with all the injuries. I'd say the most unsure I am would be the Cubs. And then the team I weirdly have the most conviction on to the negative would be St. Louis at this point.
Yep. And with St. Louis, they certainly have a nice middle of the lineup, but do have my question marks with the pitching, especially the bullpen pitching as well. So that is going to be something to gauge moving forward as Ben Wilson, who does tremendous work over here at VSiN. He is joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And when it comes to the American League Central, I think that we're able to have a lot of the same question marks as well. Like, I like the way that the Tigers have come out to be able to begin the season. The Cleveland Guardians still have no power bats whatsoever, but you know what? That's a team that's doing a great job with their pitching as well. Minnesota just needs to get Royce Lewis healthy. They are a completely different team when he's out there on the field versus off the field. And how do you take a look at that division as well? Because the one thing that I feel like I feel very safe in saying is that White Sox are going to finish dead last. They look terrible.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I feel bad. I don't really feel bad. It was a dream job. But my friend John Striffin, we called games together here in Vegas, and he just got the White Sox TV job. And obviously just thrilled for him. A dream job to get. But it's tough, right? You walk into that organization, and it's just every night. I mean, there's just not much to get excited about. You're talking about in the Royals the other night were like a $2.30 favorite. I mean, how often do you see Kansas City favored that way? But that's just, I think, the sad state of affairs there with the White Sox. You know, the team I'm probably the most interested in, and you know, you have the Shane Bieber injury for Cleveland. That's a huge gut punch to them, and not necessarily in rebuild, but they haven't been in, you know, a super aggressive mindset as far as building the roster. So I've been the most been interested in Minnesota, who was that preseason division favorite. And there's some pieces on that roster that I'm really intrigued by, but early returns just haven't been good. And you take a look at, I think this is a big day coming up here for Bailey Ober, who gets the start. You know, as a short home favorite against Tristan McKenzie. Like, his command numbers, Greg, as you know, just so good. And a guy who can command the zone as good as anybody in Major League Baseball. But, I mean, it was a really shocking first start, to say the least, for Ober. Like, I was really expecting him to take a leap, kind of along with the rest of the staff for Minnesota, where the pieces were in place. But we've always questioned their consistency and the growth of some of those younger guys and arms in that staff. And for Ober to get, what, 4 outs, give up 9 hits, I mean, 3 homers to KC, a pretty light-hitting lineup, 8 runs. I expect a lot more out of him going forward, and I'm never going to be one to overreact, you know, to one start. But that's a guy I really have my eye on, and it sort of speaks to that team as a whole, right? We have all the expectations, the pieces, the underlying data is there, but can Minnesota put it all together? That's what I'm waiting to see on.
Yep, I do think that with Minnesota, it's going to be interesting to see how they are able to play moving forward, because I think the biggest thing for them, as I was alluding to, can they just get Royce Lewis out there on the field, because he is such an impact guy for them. You can tell that the offense just is not the same when he's out of the lineup versus when he's in the lineup as well. So that's something that I do want to see. And I know something that you're going to be looking at for Sunday is this matchup between the LA Angels and the Boston Red Sox. And right now the LA Angels don't have the world's worst record, but much of that is because they played against the Miami Marlins, who have won as many games as the two of us. And shocker, the two of us do not operate a baseball team. But as of right now, we're finding the Angels as a very, very slight favorite. And we're talking about minus 112 to minus 122. You're able to get Boston at a very, very small plus price in this one. Total on this game, you're going to be getting it in that pocket of about an 8.5 or so. How do you take a look at this one, with some books actually flipping this to now the Red Sox, after they were a slight underdog, now being a little bit of a slight favorite?
I'm trying to get out in front of this, Greg. I imagine you will see Boston close as, you know, a slight favorite. It's not going to be a massive move by any means, but I do like the spot for Boston. And I mean, Angels, what, bottom 10 and on base, average starting pitcher ERA, whip, relief pitcher ERA. I mean, they were bottom 10 in all those categories last year. Bottom 10 in those that I listed now. And yet, they, as you mentioned, they won 4 of their first 7 and they got off to a really good start. I have big question marks about Chase Silseth, who gets the ball. Last year, 4.5 walks per 9. Command wasn't very good. When he threw strikes, a lot of those strikes got hit over the fence. I mean, it was a, what, 22.5% home run to fly ball rate. And honestly, Boston, they're not a team I'm really high on long term, but fall into that Pittsburgh, Milwaukee early season category where they're facing some weaker competition. They're clearly playing with confidence. And when you're in the AL East, you also understand you need to bank games and series like these when, you know, you have such a tough sledding type interdivision schedule. And so I've been impressed with what I've seen out of Boston. They've got, you know, 9 homers against righties so far, tied for 3rd in Major League Baseball. You know, and while Tanner Houck got his first start against Oakland, about as soft of a first matchup as you could get on the road, I really liked what I saw. I mean, 6 innings, 1 hit, no walks, 10 Ks. And he was a guy so much better against left-handers, I should say against right-handers a season ago. He really struggled against lefties. Angels just don't really have any lefties. They're thrown out there in the lineup. I think that's why you're seeing these struggles for the Angels, is because, you know, they just don't have a lot of diversity and variety to throw in that lineup. They have the fewest plate appearances by far for lefties this year, and they're hitting 103. Well, those are the sorts of hitters who killed Houck last year. He only gave up a .236 batting average against righties a season ago, and was, well, like a run and a half better on the road versus at Fenway a season ago. So it's one of those combination of things, Greg, where looking to buy on early this Boston team. I'm not a believer at all in the pretty solid start for LA. The underlying stats don't support it whatsoever. And I'm going to try to squeeze the juice out of this Boston orange as long as they're looking solid, even if I'm not a total believer in them long term.
Yep, I am right there with you with the LA Angels. I see myself fading them quite a bit this season. And I do think that it also speaks to as well. I'm not sure if you're looking at this or not. Man, it was such a charmed run last year for the Miami Marlins. And a big reason why the Angels do have a lot of the prices that they do and the record that they do have is because to begin the season, they did go up against the Miami Marlins, that that just looks to be a team with all their pitching injuries that it's going to be really hard to back them until some of the starting pitchers like Eerie Perez, Braxton Garrett and company come back into the fold.
No question. It's a good lesson for us as bettors that the oftentimes look at these teams and their final records when we do our breakdowns and come back for the following season. But the variance is often, even across 162-game sample size, variance is there, and it's shown in your one-run records. And especially a team like Miami, when you have some historical-type run to the positive like they had a season ago, I mean, it's just natural, right? You don't have to be an unbelievable math genius to understand that that's likely to regress a little bit, especially when you're not at 100% here. And it also just kind of reflects, too. I mean, you preach this all the time, Greg, but just that discipline you have to have, I think, so early in the season as baseball bettors. I mean, it's been amazing to me some of these home dog line moves that have just gotten destroyed the other way, where teams like the A's get bet at home just because it's guys trying to pick off a number, and yet the team just isn't any good and they lose games. It's just little things like that that I think sometimes you can get too caught up in early on in baseball betting. And I've tried to just play it so much more by feel, because there really isn't a ton of data to speak to. And Miami and those regression points are just a great example of that, kind of in a nutshell.
Yep, absolutely. And that's something that I was gauging coming into the year as well. I always love to take a look at some of those teams that they win a lot of one-run games, they lose a lot of one-run games, and bank on the teams that came up a little bit short and take a look at the teams that they won quite a few, the Miami Marlins being a chief example there, and looking to go against them as well. So I'm right there with you. And just coming into the season as well, Ben, just want to get your thoughts here. Were there any features that you did play already, or is this a little bit more of a take a look to see what we get early on during the season before firing in on some of these numbers?
It's funny. I was prepared to look at Tampa Bay win total. I was a very popular, respected market team bet to the over. They got bet up to 85.5 range, and I laid off preseason. That was probably the team I was highest on relative to the market expectations. And yet, I mean, Tampa Bay just looks like a mess right now. And it's not just Pete Fairbanks complaining about the humidor in Denver. I feel like, Greg, there are some deeper issues there. And I also, at the same time, have such belief in what Kevin Cash can do as a manager, how they manufacture so much production with the different arms they use, that I think things will be okay. But the way the series started in Colorado, not a good sign. A team you feel like you should be handling with ease. And I've really invested heavily in fantasy, and a guy I'm willing to bet on right out of the chute in Ryan Pepio. He gets his second start here, and he was really bad in his first outing. I thought it would be a great fit for him going from LA, the Dodgers, to Tampa Bay. So it's been a concerning start. And I think, kind of to your point, Greg, like talking about Miami and their reversal of fortunes from last year, I mean, remember how good Tampa was out of the chute a season ago? Yeah, I mean, the reality is it's really hard to duplicate that year to year, and there is some randomness in that and the schedule you get dealt. I certainly am surprised, though, to see them under 500, not looking like the traditional Rays sort of team that we're seeing. And so that is one I've got my eye on, is maybe a buy on the dip team if they kind of scuffle here out of the gates, and maybe you can get them at a much better price as we get later into April.
Yep, I think that that's a good way to be able to take a look at things. And for the Tampa Bay Rays, has been a little bit concerning what we've seen out of them to begin the season, and certainly losing on a walk-off grand slam to the Colorado Rockies on Friday. Not necessarily tremendous, but I'm right there with you. I think that they're going to figure it out, but a man that always has everything figured out, a man that does an absolutely excellent job taking a look at this great game, that'd be you, Ben. Let the good people at home know what's all on tap for you and how people are able to follow along on social media and other platforms.
Well, appreciate it as always, Greg. Ben_Wilson_1. And yeah, right now doing a lot of arena football and then college baseball coming up here in a few weeks, where we'll go into the conference postseason tournament. So excited for that. Have all those games for the ESPN Plus and just ESPN in general, family networks this year. So excited about that. Live bet Saturday and doing some Lombardi lines as well on Sunday, in addition to live bet Sunday. We now ramping up the baseball talk on VSiN on the weekends, which I know you're a fan of, Greg. So that's been a fun part of this stretch now that we're slowly moving away from the spring calendar into the summer.
Oh, absolutely. And I do love the great game of baseball. It's one of my favorite times of year. You know that you're going to get your right around 15 games a day, sans those travel days where it's going to be a little bit lighter, but you get some consistency. It's a nice little bit more of a relaxed vibe. You get to see the numbers come in, and then you're able to get consistent with the guys that you like to back, with the guys that you like to fade, and a guy that I always love to back, Ben Wilson, on this show. He does amazing work. So big thanks to him for joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Sunday as we touch them all.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip. Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It's always great to be able to get Ben Wilson aboard. He does amazing work over here at VSiN and so many different other platforms as well. Calling games when it comes to college basketball, college baseball, indoor football leagues. I know that some people have called him a young Joe Davis, and those that are doing so are very, very on point in my opinion. He's got an incredible voice. He does an incredible job looking at so many different sports, and it's always great to be able to get him aboard. So a big thanks to Ben for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Sunday as we touch them all.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at gunit_81/xfeed, whatever you want to call it, as we're going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the National League games first, then the American League games, any interleague games. Those are going to be at the bottom. That'll keep things all nice, neat, clean, and easy. It's unlike college basketball, where things can get very, very harebrained and strange, to say the least. So let's get things started with 901, 902 on the betting board. It is the Arizona Diamondbacks. They are on the road. They're facing off against the Atlanta Braves. Chris Sale hopes to not sell on the Braves. And we've got Ryan Nelson on the bump for the Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks, sizable underdogs between plus 180 and plus 182. Meanwhile, if you're looking at the Braves, you're going to be laying minus $2. Run line prices currently are not up, but that said, I think that we should get those soon, as total on this game is 9.5, under is minus 120, and the over is even. I saw the Braves at a minus 227 on the money line. I was willing to lay up to a minus 125 on the run line. At about a minus 220 money line like I'm seeing right now, I'm thinking that should put me on the Braves run line. I'd be very, very surprised if this is north of minus 125, but with the Atlanta Braves, this team could just go off and absolutely explode at any time with regards to the offense, and I mean, credit where credit is due. This Diamondbacks team here early on during the season, they've been able to get to so much pitching in general. Now, part of that was going up against the Colorado Rockies in the first series, but that said, they pick up Randall Grichuk and Eugenio Suarez in the offseason. You've got Ketel Marte, who's hitting for like a 400 at the top of the fold along with Lourdes Gurriel. Corbin Carroll isn't even giving you a good average right now, but he's still finding a way to be able to move the line. And then even at the bottom of the fold, they've been utilizing Blaze Alexander, a young prospect who's been able to do a solid job. So their hitting is on point. So is that of the Atlanta Braves. With the Braves, you legitimately just 1-9 don't have an easy out. Jared Kelnick is all of a sudden finding it. Orlando Arcia is hitting above a 400. Ozzie Albies, Ronald Acuna Jr., Matt Olson, Marcelo Ozuna, Austin Riley, all these guys at 25-plus homers last season. All these guys do a solid job of being able to reach base. So best of luck to these pitchers. Now, I will say this about Ryan Nelson. He last year had an ERA that was north of 5, but he had an ERA darn near 8 at home and closer to 4 on the road. I have no idea how he had such a demonstrative home and road split, but I do have some concerns with Mr. Nelson in this sort of a spot. With Nelson, you take a look at what he was able to do last season, he just wasn't necessarily able to get swings and misses, doesn't do a bad job in terms of putting guys on base. He is able to keep the walks down, but his strikeouts per nine rate is right around about 6.5. And Chris Sale, when he's on, he is on. First start of the season, didn't look bad. He gave up 2 runs over the course of 5 1/3 innings on the road against Philadelphia. You'll take that if you're the Atlanta Braves. And even for Sale during the 2023 season, felt like he got a little bit unlucky in a lot of the starts early on during the season. Then when he resurfaced in the back half of the season, gave up 0 or 1 runs in 4 out of his last 5 games of the season, was still getting right around about 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. He still has that swing and miss stuff, and I do think that the Braves are going to be able to outclass the Arizona Diamondbacks in terms of bullpen. Pierce Johnson, ever since he's gotten to Atlanta as a sub-2 ERA, Tyler Matzik, after he was injured last year, he's back at the fold. Jesse Chavez is a good long guy. I like Joe Jimenez, Rossy Iglesias in the back half, and for the Arizona Diamondbacks, you do have the guys like Miguel Castro, Luis Frias, or a little bit of a roll of the dice. I do think that you're going to be able to get good innings moving forward out of Ryan Thompson. Joe Mantiply, though, he's not the same guy that he was a few seasons ago. Kevin Ginkel felt like last year he got a tad bit lucky as well. Scott McGough actually got a little bit unlucky, but that said, I do think that the Atlanta Braves get to Nelson, and I do think that the Diamondbacks are going to be able to get to Sale a little bit as well, but that back half of the bullpen certainly is big for the Braves, and I just think that they've got more firepower. So my total 9.7 here at the 9.5. I like the over, and with the Braves, we'll delay up to minus 125 on that run line. 903-904 on the betting board. It is the Philadelphia Phillies, and at the road, they're facing off against the Washington Nationals. Mackenzie Gore is on the bump for the Nats, and it is old Christopher Sanchez on the bump for the Phillies. And the Phillies are between minus 154 to minus 162 favorites, between plus 135 to a plus 144. Your number on Washington, 8.5 is the total. Over is anywhere between minus 110 to a minus 120. Under is between even and minus 110. Was willing to take a plus 135 or higher with Washington, so I'm going to be willing to roll with them. Now, Christopher Sanchez does a very good job of not issuing a lot of walks. Has done a nice job being able to hold down the fort on that front as his walks per nine rate last season was sub-2, but you've got a Washington Nationals team that they do a nice job of just being able to put the ball in play in general, and I do think that they're going to be able to get some good contact off of him. And I do like the way that the Nationals revamped themselves in the offseason. They looked themselves in the mirror. They saw that they were a bottom four team in the big leagues with regards to home runs, so they pick up Joey Gallo. They pick up Jesse Winker, Eddie Rosario, all these guys that have had 30-plus home run seasons. Lane Thomas has been slow out of the gates, great, now hitting like $1.29, so that's been an issue. And Keiber Ruiz has been a little bit rough as well, but you've been able to get some very good production out of C.J. Abrams, who's got some good speed, a trio of stolen bases, giving you about a .385 on base. Luis Garcia is someone that has some upside as well, so it's a Nationals team that they do a nice job being able to put the ball in play, and it's hard to be able to move the line when you're not putting the ball in play, so that's something that you do like to see. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, Bryce Harper had that massive 3-home run game a few days ago. Other than that, it's been a little bit silent this year. I do think that he's going to be a little bit more consistent, but it's been a little bit all or nothing first few games of the season. Kyle Schwarber's doing a better job of being able to hit for a little bit more average this season. Then you do have Brandon Marsh, JT Realmuto, both with a pair of home runs apiece. Nick Castellanos has been a little bit rough to begin the season. And bottom of the fold for the Philadelphia Phillies, all of a sudden has a big giant anchor too. Whit Merrifield just is not hitting right now, and Yoan Rojas, he is out there for his glove and his glove only, but also do have some concerns with this Philadelphia Phillies bullpen. Just feels like first month out of the season, they always have their issues. Sir Anthony Dominguez, Jose Alvarado have not been sharp out of the gates. Do like what Gregory Soto is bringing to the table for this team, and I do think that moving forward, you're going to be able to get good innings out of Jeff Hoffman. And for the Washington Nationals, it's not a deep bullpen, but you do have a few guys that are relatively okay for this team. I like what Jordan Weems is able to bring to the table. Always roll the dice with Kyle Finnegan, but Hunter Harvey was relatively solid last season as well. I don't know if you're going to be able to get anything out of Dylan Floro, Matt Barnes, but certainly were upgrades from some of the schlubs that they had out there a season ago. And for Mackenzie Gore, this guy can give you swings and misses. North of 10 punchouts per 9 innings a season ago, but just is very inconsistent. And when he misses quite badly, as he does give up quite a bit of hard contact, and he's just a little bit of a Rick the Wild Thing Vaughn sort of disciple as well. Gave up about 3.8, 3.9 walks per 9 innings a season ago, was giving up quite a bit of contact out there in the city of Washington, D.C. So I do think that both of these offenses are going to be able to get going. I set my total at 9.3. I do like the over, and with Washington, we'll take plus 135 or higher with them. 9-5, 9-6 on the betting board. The New York Mets are on the road facing off against the Cincinnati Reds. Yes, we are on to Cincinnati, and they're on to Andrew Abbott. In the start for them, Sean Manea goes for the Mets, and the total on this game is 9. Over and under are both at minus 110, and with Cincinnati, they're between minus 110 to minus 120 favorites, and between minus 105 to plus 105 is your number on the Metropolitans, and I did set the Reds at a minus 132. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. Andrew Abbott was able to be very solid at home a season ago. On the road, it was a little bit more of a roll of the dice, and for Andrew Abbott, he does need to calm down with regards to the command. He was giving up about 3.3, 3.4 walks per 9 innings a season ago, but last year had a sub-3.5 ERA at home, a place where it's very difficult to pitch, to give up about 1.3 home runs per 9 innings, but had really good swing and miss stuff. And for Sean Manea, he was able to really close out the year solid a season ago, and it looks like he's back in full form this year. 6 innings, 8 punchouts in his season debut. He looks to just be revitalized in general. It felt like he just had lost his way after he had gotten traded from the Oakland A's a few seasons ago. He was a little bit rudderless. He was just very, very strange in general, but I don't know what it was, but it felt like something all of a sudden, it just clicked for him last season when it came to just after the All-Star break. If you look from July 29th on, final 14 appearances of the season, he was posting up a 2.61 ERA. He was only giving up about 1 home run per 9 innings. He had actually dropped a little bit with regards to his swing and miss stuff, but he was doing a much better job in terms of the command, and he is backed up by a bullpen that I'm not going to say it's amazing, but it's not bad. Now that you've got Edwin Diaz back to the fold,
That really helps. Brooks Raley is a good setup man. Jake Diekman did not have a good day yesterday, and you do have guys like Yoan Ramirez and company that can be a little bit of a roll of the dice, but getting back Diaz is big, and then you've got on the other side another Diaz, and I believe that they are related, and Alexis Diaz, who's one of the better closers out there in the big leagues. It's all about what you're able to get from there out of guys like Lucas Sims, TJ Antone. They pick up Emilio Pagan in the offseason. Not an amazing bullpen, but not a bad bullpen for the Reds, and for the Reds, this team is just much more consistent in terms of being a put bat to ball. The Mets might actually have the best overall slugger in this game, Pete Alonso. He's able to go deep on any given time, but in the starting lineup yesterday for the Mets, you had two guys hitting above a 233 this far this season, Omar Narvaez along with Brett Batty. So that's not necessarily what you want to see, as it's been a tough start to the season for the likes of Jeff McNeil, Harrison Bader, Starling Marte, guys just not getting on base. Heck, Francisco Lindor, I believe, has one hit this season. Meanwhile, for the Cincinnati Reds, Ellie De La Cruz has been incredibly inconsistent. He had a nice day yesterday, but at the plate, he has been up and down in the field. He's committed some errors. Christian Encarnacion Strand, along with Santiago Spenel, Jameer Candelario, they've been a little bit up and down, but Stuart Fairchild has been solid. Nick Martini already has himself a pair of home runs. Spencer Steer, I believe, is the more underrated guy in terms of the Cincinnati Reds prospects as well, so I like what these guys are able to provide. And out there in the city of Cincinnati, it is a little bit of a higher scoring ballpark, but Andrew Abbott was able to pitch quite well in that environment last season. Still a little bit chillier out there in the Midwest, and I do think that that allows Cincinnati to play a little bit more to the pitchers this time of year than it will in, say, a month or two. So I did set my total at an 8.8, especially with the Mets. It's not generating a lot of offense in general. I'm going to be looking at the under of the Reds, 1-8 to minus 131 on that money line, 9-7, 9-8 on the betting board. The St. Louis Cardinals, they playoffs to the Miami Marlins. Max Meyer goes for the Fish, and Kyle Gibson is on the bump for St. Louis, and St. Louis is a favorite of any between minus 130 to a minus 135, and between plus 114 to plus 120 is your number on Miami. 8.5 is the total, over and under both at minus 110. If you have bet $100 against the Miami Marlins in every single game this year, again, against the Miami Marlins, you have won every single one of those bets, and you're up probably a little bit less than $900 because you've had to lay some juice on the favorites like St. Louis. But all in all, it has been very profitable for you thus far this season, and the Miami Marlins are just dealing with so many injuries. They've got a minimum three guys that will be in the starting rotation being hurt. Eury Pérez, Braxton Garrett. I mean, these guys being injured are really killing them, and it's not like they've got a great lineup to start with. They had Ory Soler lead the team in home runs last season. He's out of the fold. Jake Berger is able to provide a little bit of power along Josh Bell, but you just take a look at the guys that they picked up in the offseason. Tim Anderson has been a bit all over the place. He's been able to give you about a 265, but he has no power whatsoever. Luis Arraez is right now hitting below the Mendoza line of 200. You absolutely cannot have that. The catcher spot has been an issue for this team. Avisio Garcia has not done anything. Jazz Chisholm is inconsistent. Like, what do you have with this Miami Marlins team? I mean, even some of the guys like Steven Oker from the offseason in the bullpen, they leave, and now they're left with Oscar Garba Zobin, Brian Hoying, and guys like this. I actually do like George Soriano, but this is a big-time issue for the Miami Marlins. Meanwhile, for the St. Louis Cardinals, it's not a great bullpen. You've got the likes of Jojo Romero, Giovanni Gallegos. They're not necessarily guys I trust in too much. Ryan Helsley was pretty much the lone returning guy that had a sub-350 ERA from a season ago, but they do pick up Andrew Kittredge and just have a much better lineup in general for St. Louis. You've had Ivan Herrera actually be very good for the team at the catcher spot to begin the season. Wilson Contreras has a pair of home runs. You've got guys out in the outfield like a Jordan Walker, Alec Burleson, that do have some upside. Brandon Donovan is one of the better on-base slash just overall batting average hitters at home in the big leagues. He struggles quite a bit on the road, but Nolan Gorman, he's able to supply some boom as well. And then you got Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado. They're going to give you 25-plus home runs, and they're going to move the line consistently every single year. The big question is, can Kyle Gibson be able to maintain what he was able to do a season ago, where he did a nice job keeping the ball in the yard, didn't give up a lot of walks, but he just doesn't have a lot of swing and miss stuff. I think in this sort of an environment, especially against the Miami Marlins, the answer is yes. And for Max Meyer, it's just someone that I don't really view as the world's greatest big league arm. I think they could be at some point, and didn't have a bad first start. Gives up two runs over the course of five innings against Los Angeles, and a little bit of a cup of coffee at the big league level a season ago as well. Is a solid swing and miss guy, has a bit of issues with regards to command, can sometimes leave the ball over the plate a little bit too too much. I just don't think that he's ready for this sort of spot. The only question is, can St. Louis do enough damage to be able to hit this over? And I think that the answer is yes. I set my total at 8.7. I'm going to be looking at the over. Miami has lost 8 of these 9 games by multiple runs. I'm going to be looking at the run line in the spot currently. You're able to get that at a plus 150 I'm seeing on the opener of laying a run and a half with the Cardinals. I was willing to take a plus 120 or higher. So, Cardinals run line, and I'm going to be taking a look at the over. 9-9, 9-10 on the betting board. The LA Dodgers, they play on the road against the Chicago Cubs. Chato Imanaga, hopefully I said that correctly, goes for the Cubs, and Gavin Stone is on the bump for the Dodgers, and Mr. Stone is a slight underdog. You're going to be finding him anywhere between minus 102 to minus 110, between minus 107 to minus 112, that number on the Cubs. Currently no numbers up in terms of a total. This is a game out there in Wrigley Field, and at a minus 105 or better, I'd be willing to lay it with the Chicago Cubs. Right now, the best number that I'm seeing is about a minus 107, so if we can get that to nudge down by 2 cents, if this opens up at a pick'em at a lot of places with a dime line, I have to do this overnight in a lot of the Vegas books as I'm recording this do not have a lineup, but as long as we can get essentially a pick'em price, I'm going to be willing to roll with the Chicago Cubs. And I did set my total quite high in this one. I set my total at a 10.8 to where a 10.5 or less, I'm going to be taking a look at the over, and an 11 or higher to the under. Just looking at the forecast, wind is going to be now blowing out. We had the wind blowing in for pretty much the entirety of the first half of the series. Now that you've got it blowing out, that is very much going to be playing in favor of the pitchers. And I mean, it's going to be blowing out at about like 15 or 16 miles per hour. Got a gentleman in Gavin Stone who did have his issues last season, and he's a up-and-coming prospect that I think has some upside, but I just don't know if he's ready for this moment yet. Meanwhile, with Imanaga on the flip side, he played at the highest level of competition that you can that isn't the big league level, and that would be the Nippon Baseball League last season for the Yokohama Dana Bay Stars. He was getting 10.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, and it is not easy to be a north of 9 strikeout per 9 inning guy out there in Japan, because there's not a lot of swings and misses. They are very disciplined hitters, so that's something that truly does speak to me. Now, I do think that Gavin Stone is going to be a little bit better than he was last season. If you saw him last season, posted up an ERA of 9 in his first start of the season this year, gave up 3 runs over the course of 5 innings, and I think that that's a little bit more of what we can expect, and his swing and miss stuff this year is better than it was a season ago. Unfortunately for him, he is backed up by not just a good lineup, but a really good bullpen as well. Joe Kelly is always a roll of the dice for the LA Dodgers. I just don't have any faith in him whatsoever, but Evan Phillips, if you're able to get to him, he's one of the better closers that you're going to find in the big leagues. They are still doing so with a few injuries along the bullpen front, especially to Broussard or Gratterall, but that said, you still have out there someone like a Danny Hudson who's able to hold down the fort. Alex Vesia is someone that 2 seasons ago was really good, and Ryan Brazier is someone I like as well. And for the Cubs, can be a little bit up and down. Jose Quas is someone that has been able to develop for the team at Edward Elsley. Has become a nice inning guy and did have to use quite a few of those arms yesterday, but when it comes to the Cubs, just such consistent production up and down the boulevard in terms of this lineup. If you do have a star player, it's Cody Bellinger, but I don't think that he's going to be hitting much more than 30 home runs this season, but got a lot of guys that could go for 20, like Christopher Morel, C.A. Suzuki, Dansby Swanson, Ian Happ, and all these guys are doing a relatively solid job of getting on base. As a matter of fact, I think all 4 of those guys are currently hitting above a 300 with north of a 350 on base, so that's very beneficial. You've also got someone like Nick Madrigal, who does a nice job just consistently being able to move the line. And for the LA Dodgers, you really don't have too many breaks when it comes to this lineup. Gavin Lux has been a little bit cold to begin the season, and you do have to wonder when he's going to be able to develop in general. I know he's out with a lot of injuries, was out of the fold yesterday, but he's been able to get really good production out of Max Muncy, who's doing a much better job of hitting for average this season. Shohei Ohtani already has a pair of home runs. He's back up to hitting north of a 300. Mookie Betts, I mean, he's already got 5 home runs. Freddie Freeman is doing an amazing job of being able to move the line. And Teoscar Hernandez, 3-plus home runs out of him as well to begin the season. So I do think that this is going to be a higher scoring game, especially with the wind blowing out. So if I told to wear a 10.5 or less, going to be looking at the over 11 or higher. I'm going to be looking at the under, and with the Cubs, willing to lay up to a minus 105 with them. Once we get those Vegas numbers up, should be able to get them at right around that pick'em or so price. 9-11, 9-12 on the betting board. This is the San Francisco Giants. They play us to the San Diego Padres. Matt Waldron goes for the Pods, and it is Logan Webb on the bump for the Giants, and the Giants are between minus 160 to minus 170 favorites, plus 142 to plus 150, that number on Slam Diego. 8 is the total, over and under anywhere to minus 105 to minus 115, and I did set my total at 8.2. I'm going to be looking at the over. Logan Webb, throughout his career, has just been so much better at home than he has been away from home. Last season at home, posted up about a point and a half lower on his ERA than he did away from home. And for Logan Webb, throughout his career, he's given up between 0.5 and 0.6 home runs per nine innings. That is in his entire career, by the way, not just a one-year sample or anything like that. Going up against a young gun in Matt Waldron, who was very good during spring training, but goes out in his first start and gets absolutely mollywopped against the St. Louis Cardinals, gives up four runs in four innings. I have to wonder if he's ready for prime time. Didn't do a bad job in terms of giving up walks a season ago, but did give up quite a bit of hard contact. He's backed up by a bullpen that I wouldn't say it's amazing. I wouldn't say that's terrible. You do lose Josh Hader from a season ago, but I like some of the guys, like a Robert Suarez that they do have in the back end. Question mark is, are you going to be able to get some consistent production out of more of these middle guys like Yuki Matsui? Johnny Brito is absolutely terrible. I don't think you're going to get anything out of him, but did like the fact that they picked up Wandy Peralta and Yel De Los Santos. Meanwhile, for the Giants, they do lose some of that bullpen depth from a season ago, but you've got Taylor and Tyler Rogers, who are pretty trustworthy. Camilo Duvall is really good in the ninth inning as well, and a Giants team that was dead last in the big leagues last year in runs per game after the All-Star break, they're all of a sudden revamped. Michael Conforto is off to a really nice start to the season, entered last night, hitting above a 4-iron with 3 home runs in the small sample size. You pick up Matt Chapman, you pick up Jorge Soler. Both of these guys have delivered multiple home runs. All right, Jung-ho Lee, who comes over from the KBO, he was one of the best hitters in South Korea last few seasons. And then you've got a lot of those steady Eddie guys like Theriot Estrada, Lamonte Wade Jr., Mike Yastrzemski, Wilmer Flores, that they all provide functional power, not amazing power, but they get on base, they're good with their platooning splits. And for the Padres, self in the middle of their fold, a pair of guys of Fernando Tatis Jr. along with Manny Machado, who entered into yesterday with a combined 5 home runs, of Tatis sitting darn near a 300. They upgraded at the catcher spot, Luis Campusano, much better than what you were able to get out of the likes of Gary Sanchez and company a season ago, and Jake Cronenworth after he hit below a 235 last season. He looks to be refortified, not necessarily a super-duper power bat, but someone that is able to do a solid job moving line. You do have to wonder if Ha-Seong Kim, who had a massive year last year, is going to be able to maintain that this year. He's off to a little bit of a rough start, though. I do like their young gun in Jackson Merrill as well. I look at this spot, though, and I do think that Logan Webb just absolutely going to outclass Matt Waldron, who I do have my question marks about, and that's a big reason why I do like this over, as I set my total at an 8.2, and if you're looking at the run line on the Giants, the opener is a plus 125. I was willing to take anything of pretty much a plus 108 or higher on that run line, as I do think that the Giants get to Waldron, and I do think that Logan Webb does his part to be able to win this game by multiple runs by shutting down the Padres, and a lot of the offensive production, in my opinion, comes from the Giants. So, looking at the run line of the Giants to go along with this total over. 9-13, 9-14 on the betting board. The Toronto Blue Jays hit the road. They're facing off against the New York Yankees. Luis Gil is on the bump for the Yankees, and Bowden Francis goes for Toronto. And Toronto is an underdog between plus 130 to plus 140. Meanwhile, between minus 145 to minus 155 is your number on Toronto. And the last game is 8.5. Over is minus 115 to minus 120. The under is between minus 105 to a minus 110. I'm seeing even money out there as well. And when it comes to the Yankees, I was willing to lay up to a minus 146 on the money line. I'm right now seeing minus 145. Wouldn't want to go any farther. And if you're taking a look at the Yankees laying run and a half, the initial opener is right around about a plus 135. I'd rather roll with the money line rather than the run line, even though it is a little bit chalky. Bowden Francis actually had a sub 250 ERA last season for the Toronto Blue Jays. It was in a very small sample size. Quite a bit of it did come out of the bullpen, but I do think that there's upside. His first start of the season did not go as planned. He gives up 7 runs at 5 and a third innings, just gets banged around like a pinata against the Houston Astros. But that said, I do think that there's quite a bit of upside with him. And the big thing for the Blue Jays is, can they get their bullpen pieces healthy? Because for the Toronto Blue Jays bullpen, they are right now dealing with a pair of guys that you rely upon so much, and Jordan Romano along with Eric Swanson. So Tim Mesa, he's going to need to step it up quite a bit. Paulo Espino is someone that they've had to pick up. That's not necessarily where you want to be. Chad Green has been a little bit of a roll of the dice the last few seasons as well, and the Yankees just clearly outclass the Toronto Blue Jays in their bullpen. I actually really like what you're able to get out of Ian Hamilton. They pick up Caleb Ferguson, Jake Cousins, not household names, but guys that were pretty solid in their respective spots the last few seasons. You've also got Clay Holmes, who could be a bit of a roll of the dice towards back half of games, but he's someone that's got really good stuff. And the Yankees, they just look to be a completely different team. At the dish end a season ago, Juan Soto just being able to move the line, not even providing home runs, but just getting on base, was big for this team. They're right now dealing with the injury to DJ Turner, up LeMahieu, and they've still been fine. You'd like to see guys like Anthony Rizzo, guys like Gleyber Torres be able to pick it up a little bit, but Oswaldo Cabrera has been able to step up in a big way for this team. You've got a lot of young guys that have been able to give you just such better efforts than they did a season ago. And even though Aaron Judge has started out a little bit slow, keep in mind 2 years ago, he started out slow that season as well, and he was able to go deep yesterday too off of Kevin Gausman, no less. And for the Toronto Blue Jays, the team is right now just stuck in the mud in terms of their overall plate approach. You had two guys in the starting lineup yesterday that entered in the game hitting above a 200, and Ernie Clement along with Justin Turner down for what now? They should be able to pick it up. You've got guys like Vlad Jr., George Springer, Bo Bichette. These guys are hitting below the Mendoza line of 200. They're not hitting for a lot of power. It's going to pick up for them, but you have to wonder when. And for the Toronto Blue Jays, it just feels like they're stuck out there a little bit. Now, they go up against someone in Luis Eel who's sort of very, very wild. Not sort of wild. He is Rick the Wild Thing Vaughn in a Yankees uniform. He's able to give you a lot of swings and misses. If he can just find a way to be able to have a little bit more command, this guy has a whole heck of a lot of upside. That said, you take a look at him throughout his MLB career, his walks per nine rate is right around 6.2. Did look much better in his first start a few days ago, went 4 2/3 innings, still did walk a few, but the swing and miss stuff, it was very, very solid. But I do think that for the Blue Jays, they're probably going to benefit a little bit from drawing those walks. But I do think that the Yankees get to Bowden Francis along with a bullpen that is currently dealing with injuries as well. So I did set my total at an 8.8. I do think that the Blue Jays pick it up a little bit on offense, but I think that the Yankees continue to hit Francis. So at a minus 145 or less, going to be looking at the money line, and I'm going to be taking a look at this one over. 915, 916 on the betting board. The Oakland Triple A's hit the red faceoff against the Detroit Tigers. Well, playing like the Triple A's right now is Joe Boyle. Oh, Boyle rules goes for the A's, and Captain Jack Flaherty is on the bump for Detroit. Detroit, in between minus 160 to minus 170 favorites, at your team plus 140 to plus 150 is your number on Oakland. 8.5 is the total, over and under, both at minus 110. Every time I post up the numbers about the Oakland A's on the run line, everyone tags in my post, a PFT commenter. That is not to throw any shade at him. I did not know that he was fading the Oakland A's until I posted that before. So this is not meant as a dig to him in any way, shape, or form. I want to make that known right now. I don't care what anyone else bets. I'm just trying to give out good information in general. And I actually will be taking the Tigers on the run line in this spot as well. I set them at a minus 110 on the run line. It's very clear that this Oakland A's team is actually a little bit more competitive than we were expecting, as they have been able to cover five out of their last six run lines. They went straight up yesterday. The big question that you've got for this Oakland A's team, though, is the hitting. Are they going to be able to consistently be able to drive in runs? Because for the Oakland A's, they have darn near as many errors as they do runs as far this season. Finally, with their last 2 days, they were able to have more runs up on the board than errors to begin the season, but the pitching honestly has not been terrible. Joe Boyle had a really, really rough start his first time out against the Boston Red Sox. He gives up 7-plus runs in that one. If you looked at that game, though, he had 4 errors behind him in the first 3 innings. There's just really nothing he could have done. A lot of those runs should not have been charged to him, in my opinion. Now, is Joe Boyle set for the big league level? In my opinion, most likely not. He has given out throughout his career about 4.5 walks per 9 innings. Has some good swing and miss stuff. You saw that at the minor league level, and he's got good size at 6'7", so that arm slot is going to be able to throw guys off a little bit, but that said, I just don't think that he's ready for prime time quite yet. What I think has been the surprise for the Oakland A's, the bullpen, it's not great by any stretch of imagination, but Danny Jimenez is a relatively solid closer. I don't know why they have Mason Miller in the bullpen. He was a really good starter last year, but they've got him out there in the bullpen as well. When they had Kyle Mueller give you a long relief, he actually wasn't bad. Austin Adams, he's okay. So you've got a little bit of something there. And then for the Detroit Tigers, Jack Flaherty, in his first start with the team, he actually looked really good. Went up against the Chicago White Sox, was able to completely hold them down, gave up a home run over the course of 6 innings. He had his swing and miss stuff working. He's was able to get, I believe, in that one, 7 strikeouts, might have actually been 8, but all in all, I like the way that he's looking here with the Tigers, and he's backed up by a bullpen that doesn't have that one dynamic closer, but all these guys like Will Vest, Alex Lang, Andrew Chafin, Jason Foley, Tyler Holton, they're all just rock-solid pieces in general. And for the Tigers, a big question mark that you do have for this team is the inning. Spencer Torkelson, he's a little bit slow coming out of the gate. He just has not been able to move the line very much. He's not hitting for a lot of power. And while Riley Green, Mark Canha both have a pair of home runs, both of these guys hitting at 200 or lower. Parker Meadows just has not been great, but Gotta love Gio Urshela, Carson Kelly, a pair of veterans that have been able to do a nice job helping this team out while some of their superstars are struggling. Javi Baez is just turning out to be a waste of money, by the way. I mean, this guy has not been able to hit ever since he got to the Detroit Tigers. He is just, he's making out like a bandit right now with the way that he signed that contract. But that said, you just take a look at this Detroit Tigers team. I think that they're going to be able to get some tremendous pitching in this one. I do think that Joe Boyle going to have a little bit of issue here as well, but I do think that things should be a little bit better than they were the first time around. So I did something I told it at 8.2, being able to get the 8.5 like we're getting right now, especially it not being super duper warm out there in Detroit this time of year. I'm going to be taking a look at the under. I like the way that Jack Flaherty is going about things, and I think that the Oakland A's just not going to be able to do their part on offense. If you're looking at that run line of the Tigers, you're able to get it at a plus 125. I do think that this is a good buy spot on the Tigers run line, despite the fact that Oakland has been covering that run and a half last few days. So looking at the run line of Detroit, and I'm going to be taking a look at this total under as well. 917-918 on the betting board. The Kansas City Royals, they play the Chicago White Sox. Garrett Crochet goes for the Sox, and Alec Marsh is on the bump for the Royals, and the Royals are between minus 130 to minus 135 favorites, between plus 115 to plus 125 is that number on the Southsiders, and 8.5 is the total. The over is between minus 110 to a minus 115. The under is anywhere between minus 105 to a minus 110, and with the Kansas City Royals, I did set them as a favorite of just minus 109. I'm going to be willing to take the White Sox. I am not going to be betting the White Sox too much this season. I feel very safe in saying that unless we see an epiphany from this team, but what I do like about the Chicago White Sox is Garrett Crochet. Garrett Crochet gave a really good start a few days ago against the Atlanta Braves. Heck, in his first start of the season against Detroit, he gives up one run in six innings but takes a loss because the schlubs around him weren't able to do anything. Now they go up against a Kansas City Royals team that they've got a lot of young talent, but at the same time, you've got big-time issues with that bullpen. Like, both of these bullpens are absolutely terrible. For the Kansas City Royals, they've got Jordan Lyles throwing innings out there in the bullpen. That's not what you want. James MacArthur, Nick Anderson, Will Smith. I mean, who out there is really trustworthy other than perhaps John Schreiber? And for the Chicago White Sox, you look at this bullpen. They lose Aaron Bummer, who was a bummer, and they don't replace him with anything better. Dominic Leone, Brian Shaw, John Brebbia, just a whole bunch of dudes in general. And for the Chicago White Sox, can someone for the love of Pete take a pitch? Like, seriously, the Chicago White Sox think that if you don't swing at a pitch, it's automatically going to be a strike, whether it's on the plate or 5 feet outside the plate. It's absolutely incredible. They have no idea what they're doing at the plate. Yoan Moncada has been able to give you a few walks, along with Gavin Sheets, who's actually looked halfway decent. He had a home run earlier in this series. I do like what Luis Robert is able to bring to the table, but he was out of the fold yesterday, and then have the likes of Don Fletcher, Martin Maldonado, Kevin Pillar, Andrew Benintendi, all these guys hitting below a 200 right now. I think Benintendi should be able to pick it up, but been rough seasons for them. And Vinny Pascantino was really good last year for the Royals before he got hurt. He's off to a little bit of a rough start to the season, but Mikel Garcia, Nelson Velasquez, Salvador Perez, they've all been able to give you multiple home runs. Bobby Witt Jr. is right now looking like one of the best young stars out there in baseball. Now you've got question marks when it comes to guys like Garrett Hampson, Nick Lofton, and Kyle Isabel, these guys at the bottom of the fold, they're not necessarily too tremendous. So I do think that you're going to get a little bit of a lower scoring game, especially with Alec Marsh looking quite a bit better than he did a season ago as well. He, in his first few starts, was absolutely horrible. Like, his first four or five starts in Major League Baseball were about as brutal as it got, but as he was able to get some innings out there at the big league level, you can tell that he was able to improve. He was able to get about 10.5 strikeouts per 9 innings last season. What was really killing him was walks, giving up about 4.5 to 5 walks per 9 innings. He gave up darn near 2 home runs per 9 innings, so the overall location, it was not great for him. But even if you go back to the back half of last season, they threw him out there in the bullpen a little bit, and then they tried to reacclimate him as a starter a little bit as well. His last few starts, I'm not saying they were amazing or anything like that, but the team went 3-2 in his last 5 total appearances. He was getting 10 strikeouts per 9 innings at a fielding independent that was sub-325. I do think that there's a lot of upside with both of these young pitchers. Both of these bullpens are relatively rough, but neither of these lineups are necessarily lighting the world on fire as well. So I did set my total at 88.2, looking at the under with Crochet getting north of a plus 110. I'm going to be willing to take that number on the White Sox. 919, 920 on the betting board. It is the Minnesota Twins playing against the Cleveland Guardians. Tristan McKenzie goes for the Guardians. Bailey Ober's on the bump for Minnesota. Minnesota is a favorite of anywhere between minus 122 to a minus 130. Anywhere between plus 110 to a plus 115 is that number on Cleveland. 8 is the total. Over is between even money and minus 110. The under is between minus 110 to a minus 120. And with Minnesota, I did set them at a minus 107, getting north of a plus 108. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the Cleveland Guardians. Guardians still don't have a lot of home run power. You've got the Naylors and Bo and Josh Naylor. And still have Jose Ramirez, who should be good for 20-plus home runs this season. But they're just doing a really good job of moving the line. Will Brennan, along with Stephen Kwan, able to throw in there the young shortstop and Brian Rocchio. These are guys hitting north of a 275, and I do think that that has a little bit of staying power. The catcher spot, now that they don't have Cam Gallagher out there, it's looking much better with David Fry as well. So I have to give a lot of credit. They're going to be playing a lot of station-to-station baseball, but I do think that it's going to work out for them. Meanwhile, we got a Minnesota Twins team that whenever Royce Lewis is not in the lineup, they just cannot hit to save their lives. Byron Buxton, for the longest time, it looked like he could be a potential star if he could just stay healthy. He just hasn't delivered too much this season. Edouard Julien was really good last year. He's having a rough start to the season now. Carlos Correa is looking much better than he did a season ago. North of a 500 on base begin the season. Certainly, that'll regress a little bit, but like the way that he's approaching things. But Max Kepler, he's had rough starts to the season the last few years. He, Carlos Santana, Willie Castro, Ryan Jeffers, Matt Wallner are all beginning the season at .154 or lower. Not a lot of power from any of those guys. Like, I'm talking about the Cleveland Guardians and the way that they're not hitting the home run ball. How about the Minnesota Twins and the fact that they've got three home runs right now? One came from Royce Lewis at two at-bats. Like, that's not great, to say the least. And for the Minnesota Twins, you do have a really good bullpen. Jay Jackson is someone that I've always felt has been underrated. You've got Jorge Alcala, Cody Funderburk, Dan DeWarte, all to be able to help out when he is healthy, as he's going to be out of the fold for this one, Yoan Duran. But that said, I do like this bullpen overall. They pick up Steven Okert in the offseason. But for Bailey Ober, he was pitching above his skis to begin the season last year, and he does a good job of not allowing a lot of walks. Two walks per nine innings. He's able to get about eight or nine strikeouts per nine innings, but when he gets hit pretty hard. We saw that in his first start. He's currently entering into this game with an ERA of 54, and Tristan McKenzie did not have a great first start as well. Against Seattle, he gives up five runs, four of which were earned in three and a third innings. I have to wonder how much of that is rust as last season. He was only able to make four starts. Was just very much a lost season. Two seasons ago, he posted up a sub-3 ERA. Looked really good. Nine strikeouts per nine innings at command. It was all of a sudden there. He was limiting hard contact, and the Guardians do back him up with a good bullpen. Emmanuel Clase is one of the best closers that you're going to find in the big leagues. I like Eli Morgan. It looks like Hunter Gaddis is having a nice sort of rebirth for his career out there in the bullpen. They have a deal with a few guys that are currently out of the fold, most notably James Karinchak, but they pick up Peter Strzelecki, who I remember he was with the Brewers and was able to give them some relatively solid innings a season ago as well. So I do think that there's quite a bit of upside here with that bullpen, and I do think that both of these pitchers are going to be able to get a little bit more online against lineups that quite frankly are not that great. But that said, I do take a look at Bailey Ober and that Twins lineup in general, and I do think that there's some question marks there. And I do like the way that the Cleveland Guardians have been playing station to station baseball. It does feel like McKenzie is still a little bit out of form as well. So I did set my total at an 8.1 here at the 8. I'm going to be willing to go over, even though it's a little bit chilly out there in Minnesota, and in this spot at a plus 108 or higher, going to be willing to trust in that Guardians money line. 921, 922 on the betting board. The LA Angels, they play us the Boston Red Sox. Tanner Houck goes for the Sox. Chase Silseth goes for the Angels. Angels are an underdog of anywhere between minus 108 to plus 105. Anywhere between minus 107 to minus 115. That number on Boston, 8.5 is the total. Over is between minus 110 to a minus 120. The under is between even and minus 110. And for the Halos, I did set them at a minus 111. I'm going to be willing to roll with them. For Tanner Houck, he's always been a inconsistent pitcher, I think is the best way of putting it. Part of it is because he's went sort of from being a long reliever to being a starter to being a long reliever. He hasn't necessarily had that one defined role and just legitimately got unlucky last year at a 5.01 ERA. Not saying that he was Warren Spahn or anything like that, but his fielding independent was more around a 4.43. And for his career, he's got about a 3.49 fielding independent compared to a 3.77 ERA. He does a solid job not giving out a ton of walks. He did have that rise up a little bit last season, but didn't necessarily give up a whole lot of deep balls or anything like that. And if you take a look at the way that Houck was able to perform on the road, a season ago, 4.18 ERA compared to a 5.80 ERA when he was at home, giving up about 1 to 1.1 home runs per 9 innings when he was away from home. Going up against an LA Angels lineup that, no doubt about it, Mike Trout, he's going to be one of the best hitters in all baseball once again this season, but what are you going to be able to get outside of Mike Trout is a big question mark, as Taylor Ward has been able to give you a pair of home runs. And Logan O'Hoppe, before getting hurt a season ago, I really liked what he was bringing to the table, but but you don't have a lot of guys who are able to move the line and just consistently get on base. Joedell, Zach Neto, these guys are ones that have not been able to develop. Nate Chenault, he just has not been a guy that has been able to find it thus far. Luis Rendifo is someone I like. He's got some upside, and Anthony Rendon finally got his first hit of the season. Yay, verily, but you've got a Boston Red Sox team that just has so much more firepower. Tyler O'Neill entered into yesterday with 4 home runs. You've got Rafael Devers, who's been a little bit cold to begin the season, but you know that he's going to pick it up. Tristan Casas towards the back half of the season last year. Second half, he was able to provide north of a 400 base now. Question mark is, can some of these guys like Zadina, Rafaela, Emmanuel Valdez be able to give you some production as Jaron Duran was able to do a season ago? And for the Red Sox, I do like their bullpen a little bit more. Chris Martin had a sub-2 ERA a season ago. Kenley Jansen, when you put him in a big spot, he will let you down. But in games like this, he's going to be rock solid for you when the pressure is not completely on him. He's good. Isaiah Campbell, he's been able to do a solid job throughout his career. Was good with the Seattle Mariners a season ago. And you do have an 8th and 9th inning duo in Matt Moore coupled with Carlos Acevedo. That's not too bad for the Angels, but they're looking for the likes of Adam Simber, Jose Cicerno to be able to pick it up. Jose Soriano is someone that has rolled the dice, and Guillermo Zungia, you don't want to be seeing him come out of the bullpen. He has not been great, to say the least. So you do have your issues there, but I love what I saw to Chase Silseth this season ago, and that's a big reason why I did set the Angels as a favorite. I do think that they're outgunned a little bit in terms of the lineup themselves, even though they do have the best player in this game in Mike Trout. But you look at what Silseth is able to provide, and this guy is a very good swing and miss artist. Throughout his career, has given you north of 9 punch outs per 9 innings. He last season did give up the deep ball a little bit more than what you'd like, about a home run and a half per 9 innings. Did deal with a few injuries, but I think that this guy's stuff is just so gosh darn good, and I do think that the Angels find a way to be able to get the job done at home. So I did set the Angels at a minus 111. I'm going to be willing to roll with them on the money line, and I do think that you're going to be able to get some runs up on the board. I do like both of these offenses, especially the middle of the LA Angels lineup, the bottom of the fold. Leaving some question marks, but going to be looking at the over and the Angels on the money line. 923, 924 is going to be the DK Network right up pick. It's the Houston Astros on the road facing off against the Walker Texas Rangers. Dane Dunning looking to get her Dunning for the Rangers. And Ronaldo Blanco is on the bump for Houston. And Houston is anywhere between minus 105 to even money. Between minus 110 to a minus 115 is that number on Texas. 10 is the total. Over is minus 115. And the under is minus 105. And right up pick is going to be on the under. I set my total at a 9.2. Now, I know that there's a lot of people that love to fade these pitchers coming off of a no-hitter, and I am going to be willing to roll with the Texas Rangers. I did set them as a favorite of a minus 112, but I do think that Blanco is just so much more of an improved pitcher, and he just feels like a guy that thrives in the starter's role. If, as a matter of fact, you take a look at what he was able to do out of the bullpen a season ago versus what he's been able to do as a starter. This does include the no-hitter that he threw a few days ago, and it is night and day different. 3.83 ERA in a starter's role, 4.87 ERA when he is coming out of the bullpen, and he does need to clean up the fact that he has given up north of 2 home runs and 4 walks per 9 innings over the last 2 seasons, but I do think that there's quite a bit of upside there. You've also got a bullpen of the Astros that was 8th in the league last season in terms of ERA. That was without Josh Hader. Now, they do lose a few guys like Ryan Stanek, Hector Neris that were very solid for this team, but you still do have Seth Martinez, who 2 seasons ago was relatively solid. I do like what Ryan Presley brings to the table, and for the Texas Rangers, they were 24th in the league in terms of bullpen ERA a season ago, but they were able to fortify that. Kirby Yates, David Robertson, that certainly helps out, and for Dane Dunning, he just has always been able to pitch better in Texas rather than away from home. Since joining the Rangers in 2021, he's got a road ERA that's right around 470 with 3.8 walks per 9 innings allowed. Just has better command at home. 2.7 walks per 9 innings at home. 3.73 ERA with 1.2 home runs allowed per 9 innings when he has been at home since the beginning part of the 2021 season. Now, if there is a roll of the dice when it comes to this under, it is the fact that you've got 2 lineups that were in the top 5 in the big leagues last year in terms of runs per game. And for Houston, they actually scored more runs per game when they are away from home rather than when they were at home. But for Texas, they are a bunch that I do think is going to have a little bit of a tough time with Ronald Blanco. They can have a few swings and misses. Now, you've got a lineup that really 1-9, it doesn't have that one true weakness. Perhaps you're going to have one or two guys struggling. Leody Taveras has been a little bit slow coming out of the gates, but Marcus Semien, Corey Seager, Adolis Garcia, all these guys are good for 25 plus home runs. Garcia already has 4 by himself. Jared Walsh has been a very good get for the team. Jonah Heim has been rock solid. And then for the Houston Astros, Alex Bregman just always struggles in the first half of the season, and the Houston Astros, they do seem to as well. First month of the season, both last year and 2 years ago, they were 14th or less in terms of runs per game entering May 1st. So this team is a perennial slow starter. Jose Abreu has been having a tough time at the plate. Now, Jeremy Peña, after he had a rough year last year, looks like he's returning to form. He, Yennier Diaz, Jose Altuve have started out the year hitting well north of a 340. Yordan Alvarez had a multi-home run game against the Blue Jays. It does seem like that's going to be able to get him back online a little bit, but I do think that these two young pitchers are going to be able to do a relatively solid job holding down the fort in a big-time spot. And I do think that Ronald Blanco, while he doesn't duplicate the no-hitter, I do think that he's going to be able to piggyback off of success. I did set my total at a 9.2, so my right up here is on the under of 10. And when it comes to the Texas Rangers, I did set them at a minus 112. So I'm going to lay up to a minus 111 with the Rangers money line. And my write-up is on the under, 925, 926 on the betting board. The Baltimore Orioles hit the road face-off against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Marco Gonzalez is on the bump for Pittsburgh, and Dean Kramer is on the bump for Baltimore. Baltimore between minus 120 to minus 125 favorites, any between plus 105 to plus 112 is your number on the Pirates, and your total on this game is 8.5. The over is minus 115, under is minus 105, and for Baltimore, I set them on the money line at a minus 117, so we're going to be waiting on a little bit of a line movement there. If you're looking at them laying around an F, you're going to be finding that more around plus 130, plus 135. I'd rather stick with the money line if we can get down to about a minus 115 or so, or if we can get this to more like a plus 118 on the Pirates, we'll be looking there. So we're in a little bit of wait and see mode, but I'm thinking that once we get the Vegas lines up, we should be able to get that like minus 115, minus 116. That will put me on Baltimore. Now, for Dean Kramer, he does give up quite a bit of hard contact and did improve the swing and miss stuff a little bit last season. First few years at the big league level, he was getting fewer than 6.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. He was able to improve that to more around 8 to 8.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, but still did have a fielding independent that did not match up with the ERA a season ago. Last season, posted up a 4.12 ERA, but north of a 4.50 fielding independent, as he was giving up about 1.4 to 1.5 home runs per 9 innings. So you do have to question if he's going to see a little bit of regression this year. And if you look at what Kramer was able to do towards the back half of the season last year, it did feel like he was getting a little bit stronger as things were going along as well. If you look at the months of August into September, he made a grand total of 10 starts in the stretch, 289 ERA, 363 fielding independent, and gave up just 4 home runs in 53 innings. So he has done a nice job being able to control the deep ball just a little bit more, and now he's going to need to do so in this spot against a Pittsburgh Pirates team that plays in a relatively pitcher-friendly ballpark. But you've got Oneil Cruz, a young up-and-coming prospect that's able to hit for average and is able to hit for power. Brian Reynolds, he's a more veteran guy that's able to do the same thing as well, but you've got a lot of young guys that it feels like they could be a little bit inconsistent, like Henry Davis, who was that former number one overall pick. Jack Swinisky gives you good power, but doesn't necessarily do the world's greatest job of being a move line. But all in all, I do like this Pirates lineup, especially with Brian Hayes being someone that can just find a way on base along with Michael A. Taylor. But for Baltimore, this team just is really good as a machine of being able to find a way to be able to get big hits, and they just are very well-rounded in general. They've got good platooning splits as well. You've got so much depth with this team as you're able to throw out there someone like a Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowser on any given day to be able to give you a good positional just edge. You've got Ryan Mountcastle. He had 30-plus home runs a few seasons ago. He has found a way to be able to move the line. Anthony Santander is your main power bat. He had 25-plus home runs a season ago. Already has 2 this season. Gunnar Henderson was really able to pick it up in the second half of the season. Then Adley Rutschman finds a way to be able to hit for average and power as well. And for Baltimore, they have a solid bullpen despite the fact that they are going to be without Felix Bautista for the season. You've got the likes of Danny Coulomb, Yennier Cano, who missed the 2023 season, and Dylan Tate coming back. That's big. Jacob Webb. I mean, these guys are all nice, and then you got old Craig Kimbrell, who you want to avoid at all costs. But that said, for the Pittsburgh Pirates, they are dealing with a little bit of an injury to Jose Hernandez. I like what they're able to get in the back half, though, as well. Ryan Borucki, David Benar, Aroldis Chapman, these guys are relatively rock solid. Josh Fleming, I think, could be a nice reliever along with Hunter Stratton for this team as well. So I do think that both of these starters can have their issues, as Marco Gonzalez just has never been a swing and miss guy. Had a relatively good first start of the season. Gives up 1 run in 5 innings in his debut against Washington Nationals, but again, that was against the Washington Nationals. And for Marco Gonzalez, though he did have a nice 4-1 record when he was out there for Seattle in 10 games last season, swing and miss stuff was not there. He got fewer than 6.5 strikeouts per nine innings, was giving up north of three walks per nine innings, was very, very fortunate to have a lot of the numbers that he did have ever since that just remarkable 2020 season where he had a strikeout to walk ratio of nine. Just has not been the same player with regards to his command. So I do think that the Orioles are going to be able to get to him, and I do think that the Pirates do get to Kramer as well before the bullpens calm things down, but I do think that the damage is going to be done by then in terms of total. Set my total 9.3. Looking at the over-end with the Orioles, I'd be willing to lay up to a minus 117 with them. In terms of the Pittsburgh Pirates, I would need a plus 118 or higher to be out firing on them. 927, 928 on the betting board. The Milwaukee Brewers play out to the Seattle Mariners. Emerson Hancock goes for Seattle, and Colin Ray says set the parade to another start as for the Brewers are between minus 118 to minus 125 favorites, plus 105 to plus 113. That number on Seattle, 9 is the total. Under is minus 115, and the over is minus 105. And I'm willing to go up to a minus 120 with the Milwaukee Brewers. Colin Ray actually had an ERA that was about a half a point higher when he was at home rather than on the road a season ago, and it's not like he's going to go out there and light the world on fire, but for a start against the New York Mets, relatively solid, gives up one run over the course of five innings, and for Colin Ray, he's just a pretty steady guy. He's someone that last season gave up about 2.6, 2.7 walks per nine innings. He only got about 8 strikeouts per nine innings, but kept things out in front of him to give up a little bit more contact than what you'd like it on. But this is a Seattle Mariners lineup that they do have their hits and misses, to say the least. Julio Rodriguez is off to a little bit of a cold start to the season. We've seen that from him before. Jorge Polanco, Dominic Canzone, Mitch Garver, these guys towards the bottom of the fold, they just have not been able to find it. You've had a nice start to the season for Mitch Haniger, who he just always seems to hit when he's in a Seattle Mariners uniform, which it feels like that's every other year at this point. But J.P. Crawford has had a little bit of a rough time as well for the Mariners. Big key is, can they match that Milwaukee Brewers bullpen, as they've got Abner Uribe, Elvis Piguero, Joe Piamps, all these guys are able to give you some relatively solid innings. Meanwhile, for the Seattle Mariners, they're dealing with a few injuries, most notably to Matt Brash in the bullpen, but Andres Munoz is able to lock it down late, and they just find guys out of ambiguity that are able to do a nice job coming up big when they need them to. Ryan Stanek is someone that they acquired in the offseason. I do like that. Taylor Cicado, Cody Bolton, their reclamation projects I think are going to work out for the team. Trent Thornton has been relatively solid in the bullpen as well, and then for the Milwaukee Brewers, biggest question that you've got with this bunch is the young bats. Are they going to be able to stay consistent? Bryce Turang going into yesterday was hitting above a 400. I don't know if I'm going to be willing to buy into that, but got Willy Adames, who's doing a better job of being able to find a way on base than he did a season ago, but the likes of a Sal Frelick, I was mentioning Turang a little bit earlier, you're able to throw in there Blake Perkins, Jackson Chirillo. Are these guys going to be able to do a solid job of not necessarily being like 300 hitters or guys that give you 20 plus home runs, but consistently give you solid at bats day in and day out to be able to take the pressure off of the likes of William Contreras, Christian Yelich, who's looking not quite like MVP Christian Yelich, but is looking pretty sinking good right now, and they get to go up against a guy in Emerson Hancock, who in his first start, he gave up three runs over the course of five and a third innings. Nothing great, nothing terrible. His swing and miss stuff just has not been able to develop at this point. You even take a look at the starts that he had a season ago. He's very much a pitch contact guy, but much like a lot of these Seattle Mariners pitchers, does a relatively solid job of being able to throw strikes, doesn't hurt himself with walks. So I did set my total at 8.8. I do think that the colder air out there in Milwaukee, even though this is a dome stadium, it still does sort of linger a little bit. It's a retractable roof situation, so it's not going to be super warm out there. I do think it's going to be helping out these two rather pitch contact guys, so I do like the under, and I do like the Brewers up to a minus 120 on the money line, and we wrap things up with 929, 930 on the betting board. The Colorado Rockies play us the Tampa Bay Rays. Ryan Pepiot goes for the Rays, and Dakota Hudson is on the bump for Colorado. 12 is the total. Under is between minus 110 to a minus 115. Over is between minus 105 to a minus 110. Minus 153 to minus 162. That number on the Rays, and Colorado, you're going to be getting anywhere between plus 136 to a plus 142. Set the Rays at a minus 169 on the money line, and if you're looking at the run line, laying between about minus 110 to a minus 112, I'm willing to go up to a minus 115. Recognize that the Rays did not have such a savory start to the series, giving up that walk-off grand slam a few days ago, but for the Tampa Bay Rays, I do think that they're going to do a nice job of getting to a pitch and contact guy in Dakota Hudson, who the only thing he's really done well in his career is be able to control the deep ball. As he gives up north of 3.5 walks per nine innings, he doesn't get any strikeouts whatsoever. I just don't see how Dakota Hudson is able to function in this day and age of Major League Baseball. Meanwhile, for the Tampa Bay Rays, has been rough for a few of these guys. Brandon Lau has been hitting below the Mendoza line of a 200, but I do think that you're going to be able to have Randy Arozarena along with Harold Ramirez, who are both hitting below a 250, be able to pick it up a little bit. Both of those guys have functional power along the Yandy Diaz. And for the Colorado Rockies, Charlie Blackman at the top of the fold has done a nice job of being able to move the line along with Ryan McMahon. McMahon goes deep yesterday. He's hitting nearly a 400. And Charlie Blackman has done a very good job of being able to get on base. But Brendan Rodgers, Nolan Jones, Elierios Montero, these guys are towards the middle of the lineup. They just have not been able to give you anything whatsoever to this point. And for the Tampa Bay Rays, they just have the Colorado Rockies completely outgunned in the bullpen. When you're able to throw out there someone like Colin Pouche, who did have a little bit of a rough go of it a few days ago, but you're able to couple that with the likes of a Pete Fairbanks, who I really do like for the team, Jason Adam, who is just rock solid in general. I do think that they have a massive advantage over a Colorado Rockies team, which has Victor Vodnik trying to be one of their main relievers. Nick Mears, actually, I do think has a little bit of upside. I don't know why he was pretty much just let go of by so many different teams, but I do have my question marks when it comes to the likes of Jake Bird, Jalen Beeks, Justin Lawrence, guys like this. And I do think that Dakota Hudson can have a rough go of it in this one against a guy in Ryan Pepiot, who he was able to bust onto the scene last season with the LA Dodgers, but it wasn't necessarily the world's biggest sample size. You do have to wonder if it's going to be sustainable for him moving forward, as he was getting well north of 10 punchouts per nine innings out in Los Angeles a season ago, but was one of the more fortunate pitchers out there in baseball, posted up a 2.14 ERA, but a fielding independent that was more around about a 4.18, only gave up one walk per nine innings. I don't think that he's going to duplicate that. That was a small sample size of 42 innings, but did give up a home run and a half per nine innings. Good swing and miss stuff, not great swing and miss stuff. So interesting circumstance here. I do think that you're going to get plenty of runs up on the board, especially with Dakota Hudson being out there. So did set my total 12.3, looking at the over, and with the Rays, wanted to lay up to a minus 115 on that run line. That'll wrap things up for the Sunday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the Beats and Family Podcast. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at TuneIn_D1. Keep in mind, letters M, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire on whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review coming at you guys every single day throughout the baseball season. That means I'm back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.